Sportsnet 960's NFL Fantasy Insider Joe Dolan is brought to you by Gateway Mechanical. Switch and save 10% or more on your commercial HVAC or refrigeration maintenance. Learn more today at gatewaymechanical.ca/switch.
Joe joins us right now. First of all, Joe, how much, if any, Manning Monday night did you watch last night?
I did. I switched between both broadcasts because I wanted to kind of get a feel for both broadcasts, and I thought it was a nice change of pace, and obviously the reviews have been great, and, you know, I think that's, I thought it was a really interesting broadcast. Peyton was kind of telling stories. He was giving insight. Obviously, Eli was, too. It's a delicate balance, though. You have to have the right people to do it, and I think they did a really good job with it. And I switched back and forth between the two broadcasts, and I would imagine a lot of people did that as well. So that's what I did, just to try to get a feel for it. But I thought it was probably, they would think, an overwhelming success with the guests and, you know, making fun of Charles Barkley for gambling and, you know, all that stuff was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, I love the bit, too, with Ray Lewis. He's like, I was going to sign in Baltimore, but I heard Ray kicks the crap out of his quarterbacks in practice, so I decided not to sign in Baltimore. I thought that was pretty funny. Just before we get into some of the waiver ads and what you saw in week one, what did you make of last night? And, I mean, everyone's talking about the overtime, the early celebration, the false start, the doink interception. There was so much in that game. What did you make of Raiders and Ravens?
Well, what's funny about that game is 60 points were scored. I don't really think either quarterback was particularly sharp. I mean, at least Derek Carr for the first few quarters of the game, I don't think was really sharp. I mean, Darren Waller had 19 targets. He probably should have had like 15 receptions. He had only 10. But for 435 for Derek Carr without looking particularly sharp, I think the Raiders are going to be happy with that. The Raiders might have a few more weapons than you might think. You know, Henry Ruggs is a certain kind of player. Derek Carr missed him, I think, on the second play of the game. He was wide open. It would have been a touchdown if he saw him. But that's the kind of player he is. But Bryan Edwards, everybody was asking us because, you know, at the site and at Fantasy Points, we were kind of hyping him up this offseason. And, you know, where was he? Well, he shows up in overtime and he makes some big plays for them. So for the Raiders, I think it was clear if you were watching the game that while he looked on his carries, I thought he looked good. Josh Jacobs was not 100%. They used Kenyon Drake as a receiver, and I think that's going to be a fantasy-relevant role for Kenyon Drake moving forward. And if you flip it over to Baltimore, Hollywood Brown and Sammy Watkins got it done. I did not think Lamar was sharp at all as a passer. Obviously, he's just otherworldly as a runner. That's beside the point. And I think if you come out of that game and you had picked up Tyson Williams, I think you're probably pretty pleased with what you saw. He clearly looked like, well, that he had more juice than Latavius Murray.
Yeah, and I think we saw that, and certainly Sean Payton, why he made the decision he did, didn't know if there was a lot left in that tank. I know that, you know, not only you, but a lot of your peers were talking about the fit in Baltimore for Murray. He ends up out-carrying Williams, but as you say, when you look at what they had last night, it's very clear Williams had more pop, more gas in the tank, and certainly was hitting the holes a lot harder. As Murray gets used to that playbook, though, and it spends more time there, do you expect this to continue to be a 50-50 split? Or overall, how do you view the Ravens' backfield?
I don't think the Ravens, because of the nature of their offense, can have one back. I really don't, because of how run-heavy they are. The encouraging thing for me for Tyson Williams, with the exception of, you know, the fact that he looked like he had far more juice than Latavius Murray, the receiving production, 3 catches for 29 yards. Yeah. That is not something that Gus Edwards, we were building into his projection. I don't know if we were building 3 receptions a game into J.K. Dobbins' projection. I don't know if he'll get 3 a game, but that was an element of his game that he has. And that is stickier for fantasy, you know, than touchdowns and whatnot. And I don't expect him to be Christian McCaffrey, but it was nice to see Lamar Jackson check it down a little bit to a guy who has some juice. As a matter of fact, you know, watching Williams, I thought he was kind of built like a receiver. He almost had that kind of tall, lanky build that was kind of interesting. And it was good to see him catch some passes. That was my takeaway from that game for that backfield. I'm not telling you, by the way, to drop Latavius Murray. Somebody who's going to get 10 carries a game, if that continues in this offense, is valuable to have on a fantasy team. But Williams is clearly the guy, I think.
Joe, as we transition to Waiver Wednesday and look at, you know, potential ads into week two, it's always the danger, of course, of overreaction on week one. But speaking of Baltimore running backs and gas in the tank, what's your takeaway on Mark Ingram in Houston with 26 carries? I know it was against Jacksonville, but the biggest, you know, you talk about guys that get carries. I mean, 3 carries inside the 5. This thing could obviously flame out, but thoughts on Mark Ingram, who clearly is the guy that Houston was favoring in week one?
My read on this situation is fool's gold. I see people, I got questions asking me about Elijah Mitchell of San Francisco, and I'm sure you're going to ask about him, so I know we'll get to him, vis-a-vis Mark Ingram, and one is just so clearly above the other. I mean, like, this is Houston week one beating a bad defense, a bad team with a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach who doesn't seem to have a grasp on what he's doing just yet, if I'm being kind. I think this Ingram thing is complete fool's gold. If you can pick him up for nothing, fine. Put him on the end of your bench. I expect going forward that Houston backfield is going to look more like what the Jets backfield looked like in week one, where you have three guys rotating and none of them did diddly poo for fantasy. That's going to be my read. I think this is a week one anomaly. Remember, Mark Ingram was somebody Baltimore actively benched at the end of last season. So, like, this is one where if you can pick him up for nothing, fine. I'm not throwing any fab budget. There are so many guys I would rather roster than Mark Ingram.
I'm an Ingram owner, and I'm trying to trade him, which is obviously
well. I mean, if you could find somebody, I would do that. Yeah. Like that. That's exactly what I would do.
Speaking of Elijah Mitchell, there's no question he is the top ad out of week one. He surprised everybody with not only his active spot on the roster, but with how much usage he got. It helped with the early injury to Mostert, who's, as we learned this morning, is done for the season with knee surgery. Trey Sermon is waiting in the weeds. You've also got Jamichael Hasty there. But Shanahan loves this Mitchell guy. All expectations are he's going to be the lead back. You talk about fab budget. It's always crazy in week one. You don't want to blow the whole thing, but running backs are always super valuable in fantasy. Just, I guess the floor is yours, Joe, on Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of layers to this onion that we're going to have to try to peel back here. First and foremost, San Francisco surprised everybody, including the beat reporters. You know, I found it funny. I'm a trained journalist. I went to school for journalism. You know, you have these beat reporters at 1:05 Eastern, 11:05 your time when the games kick off. They're like, well, you know, here's what happened. You know, Trent Sherfield outplayed Brandon Ayuk in training camp, and that's why they did this. And, oh, you know, here's what happened. You know, Trey Sermon was outplayed by Elijah Mitchell and Jamichael Hasty. And you know what? Something that would have been really nice to have been brought to my attention yesterday. Like, you know, like, I understand maybe they had this in confidence and get all that, but it was obviously Kyle Shanahan dropping the hammer on these two guys. Now, when it comes to Mitchell, I see the Ayuk thing I don't think is going to continue. Like, I don't think Trent Sherfield is going to hold off Brandon Ayuk for the season. You know, this is like if you have a tricycle out ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, it's not going to happen. You might start ahead, but you know, eventually you're going to be behind. Thank you to Danny Rick for cashing me a ticket this weekend. But the Mitchell thing's really interesting because this is a guy we have Greg Cosell, who, if you know him, he's on the ESPN matchup show, and he's just one of the most respected voices in the space in terms of film analysis. And he did rookie evaluations for us at Fantasy Points, and he watched Mitchell before he got drafted when he was at Louisiana Lafayette. And he said he's somebody who can catch the ball well, but he would fit really well in a foundational zone scheme. So I put that scouting report up, and one of our subscribers comes up to me and he goes, Joe, does San Francisco run a foundational zone scheme? And I said, my man, San Francisco runs the foundational zone scheme. it is the offense that everybody wants to copy if you want to run zone blocking in the run game. Mitchell is interesting because this suggests he's earned more opportunities. He ran for 100 yards in his first game and a touchdown. So right now, Trey Sermon has an uphill climb. That being said, I am not closing the coffin on Trey Sermon. You know, this has been a backfield throughout Shanahan's tenure where multiple guys have produced, multiple guys have gotten opportunities. We're talking Raheem Mostert, obviously. He was an undrafted guy who went from practice squad to practice squad, ended up, you know, being a guy who playing in the Super Bowl. Tevin Coleman. Jeff Wilson was a league winner for people last year. Mitchell, obviously, here. Jeff Wilson's on the pup list. He'll come back at some point. So this, the book is not shut on Trey Sermon. If you had to ask me who would I rather roster right now, for sure it's Elijah Mitchell. he has now, as short a track record as it is, he has more on his resume than Trey Sermon has. And obviously, Shanahan does not give a crap where you were drafted. You have to earn snaps on his team. But this does not close the book on Trey Sermon by any stretch of the imagination. It could take a fumble, maybe an injury. But Trey Sermon's going to be active. He is going to be on this active roster, barring something unforeseen, in week two following the injury to Mostert. And let's see what he does with his opportunities. That being said, Elijah Mitchell is the number one waiver wire pickup of the week.
He is Joe Dolan of Fantasy Points, fantasypoints.com. He's our guest every Tuesday, all things fantasy football. Anybody else, before I move on from running backs, anybody else that pops for you in week one that, you know, maybe it's not a waiver ad, but anything that jumps out to you for running backs in week one?
Well, number one, just for a guy who's not on the waiver wire, but, you know, you might have been a little bit skeptical about, Joe Mixon had true bell cow usage. Let's just go with that. I mean, like, Joe Mixon had, I believe, 33 touches, 150 yards from scrimmage, and scored a touchdown. He played 31 snaps on run plays. That is the most of any running back in week one. It was bell cow work for Joe Mixon. So there's one. Let me throw a waiver wire guy out to you. And you might think I'm sounding like an idiot, but just stay with me here. You asked me about Mark Ingram, who had 26 carries in week one. Here's a player I'd rather have on my team than Mark Ingram. He plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. His name is Kenny Gainwell. He's a rookie running back. He's rostered in about 8% of Yahoo leagues as we speak. While Miles Sanders had over 100 yards from scrimmage in that game, Gainwell was exclusively Philly's hurry-up back. He had 9 for 37 rushing and 2 and 6 receiving, and for a rookie running back, he was exceptional in pass protection. He is going to get on the field in obvious passing situations. And because, you know, you have Jalen Hurts, the run game is going to be foundational to what the Eagles do. Kenny Gainwell's going to get snaps. I'd rather have somebody with that kind of upside than drive down a dead end that is Mark Ingram.
At the receiver group, I think all eyes were on the unfortunate injury for Jerry Jeudy, who we thought was going to be a breakout type season. That was an ugly injury. As you put on Twitter, though, could have been so much worse.
Much worse.
Yeah. Your thought on Tim Patrick?
This is one of those guys who consistently, and I'm just going to throw a complete anecdote out there. Tim Patrick doesn't sound like a wide receiver name.
No.
Like, he sounds like a third string tight end or something. Yeah. And I swear to God, I think that's one of the reasons people are just like, oh, it's Tim Patrick. Like, but every time this guy gets an opportunity, he produces. Like, KJ Hamler is the go for the gusto pickup. By the way, I'm holding Jerry Jeudy if at all possible. Maybe you have a shallow bench and you don't have an IR spot. But if at all possible, I'm holding Jerry Jeudy. He was going to catch 10 passes in that game. KJ Hamler's the go for the gusto pick. He should have had a 50-yard touchdown. Teddy Bridgewater put it in the basket and Hamler dropped it. But Tim Patrick, every single time this guy gets an opportunity, it seems like third and six, that ball, whoever's been the quarterback for them, Drew Locke, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, third and six, that ball's going to Tim Patrick. He's somebody you can pick up, and I think he's more like a wide receiver 4 or a wide receiver 5 on your roster. But sometimes during the season, those guys who you can put in your lineup and say, you know what, that guy's going to catch me 5 passes for 50 yards, those guys have value, and Tim Patrick's that.
And before we move on from Denver, we talked last week about the Williams-Gordon split. What did you make of what you saw? I believe it was a 50% down the middle split for those two.
50-50 split, and now while Melvin Gordon's not going away, I think that's what's evident after week one, at least for now, don't box score scout. Don't look at the box score and say Melvin Gordon had 101 rushing yards and Javonte Williams had 45 and say, oh my God, Javonte Williams. Melvin Gordon had a 70-yard touchdown run when that game was out of hand already. Like that, I mean, look, it happened. They're not going to bench Melvin Gordon and say, well, you had 101 yards with 70 were on one run, so you're benched. It's not going to happen. But for the most of the game, my opinion, Javonte Williams looked like the better back. But just for right now, expect that split to continue. But I said it all off season along. You weren't drafting Javonte Williams. Now, maybe a little bit of the late summer training camp hype had you buy in on him, start him week one. But you weren't really drafting Javonte Williams for week one and two and three. You were drafting Javonte Williams for weeks 14, 15, and 16. That was my assertion all offseason. Much like happened with Jonathan Taylor last year, I think the same thing's going to happen with Javonte Williams. And I think it's a good sign, quite frankly, that he played half the team snaps in week one.
You look at the ownership percentage of Christian Kirk and you're like, how? Like, how is he not owned on more teams? He was obviously very good as the Cardinals trashed the Titans in Tennessee in week one. You and I were laughing and joking about A.J. Green as he said, I want to see it. Well, he didn't see much in week one from A.J. Yeah. Green. Your thoughts on Christian Kirk and should he be owned more than the 16% that we saw?
I have been Lucy footballed so many times by this guy, Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk, Will, has 14 touchdowns in his career. 14 touchdowns. 9 of them have come in multiple touchdown games.
Wow.
So he has had quite literally 3 blow-up games in his career and nothing else.
He's the definition of boom or bust right there.
Yeah, and almost all the time has been bust. I'm not saying don't roster him. The guy who I'm identifying in that game as the guy I want on my roster is Rondale Moore. The rookie who came out and had a 4-for-68 in his first NFL game. Christian Kirk has teased me multiple times. Rondale Moore, I'm still wide-eyed here. I haven't been hurt yet. So Rondale Moore is the guy who I'm identifying here. I just think Kirk is one of those guys who's going to be a splash player. And Rondale Moore, I think, is a guy who has an opportunity to make more of a consistent impact with his dynamic skill set.
He's Joe Dolan, Fantasy Points, fantasypoints.com, our guest every single Tuesday for all things fantasy football. A couple more for you. One is completely self-serving from my co-host. He just asked me to ask you about this. So your thoughts on Cordarrelle Patterson in Atlanta?
Well, quite honestly, I thought he looked better than Mike Davis did. He had 7 carries for 54 yards, 2-for-13. I mean, the Eagles just walloped the Falcons. The Falcons offense, they got off to a good start running the football, but their offensive line got dominated later in that game, and that's the concern for me. But if he has running back eligibility in your league, I wouldn't mind tossing him a pickup. Like, I truly and honestly thought he looked better than Mike Davis in that game. He looked more explosive, harder to tackle, and obviously he gives you the receiving element as a former wide receiver. So if he has running back eligibility, I think he's a deep flyer to take. I'm just not very sure how good Atlanta's going to be.
Speaking of an absolute pounding, Green Bay Packers took it in the teeth.
Atlanta.
Your thoughts on Jameis Winston, because the biggest knock was, you know, ball protection. He threw no picks in that game. It's very clear that a year learning under Drew Brees and Sean Payton could be wonderful for this guy. You know, again, you're not going to blow your fab budget on Jameis Winston, but your thoughts on the Saints quarterback and the Saints offense as a whole, as they did take it to the Packers in Jacksonville.
So I don't want to take away from what the Saints did positively, because Jameis Winston did play well, but he threw 5 touchdowns for 148 passing yards. You might not be surprised to learn that he is the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for 5 touchdowns with fewer than 150 yards passing. You know, I had people asking me, oh my God, you guys loved Marquez Callaway. Well, it had 2 targets. I was like, dude, Jameis Winston threw the ball 20 times. There's somebody's not going to get a lot of targets out there. I mean, it's going to happen. So good news for them. Alvin Kamara, I thought Jameis starting was good news for Kamara. That bore out in week one. He had 23 touches and a touchdown. Juwan Johnson, if you need a tight end, I would be scrambling to the waiver wire to see if this guy's on there in a deeper league. He didn't play a ton of snaps, but he's a former wide receiver. He is super talented. He scored 2 touchdowns. But ultimately, I think this was arguably one of the biggest no-shows I have ever seen in the NFL. Like the Packers it's like they saw the Titans against the Cardinals and were like super inspired and were like, we're gonna one up these guys. We're gonna really show the people what a no-show looks like. That was that. If the Packers come out Monday night and lay an egg against the Lions, I'm jumping out my window. I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm willing to look at this and just say, guys, I think this was a complete no-show by the Packers in much the same way they no-showed in Tampa Bay last year. Aaron Rodgers, for some reason, has a horrible record in Florida, but they no-showed in Tampa Bay last year. That is one where this is against a worse team, mind you, the Saints, but that is one where I think I'm just going to give Aaron Rodgers and his long resume the benefit of the doubt as opposed to overreacting to this game. Because quite frankly, maybe deep down, I don't want to know what some of my teams are going to look like if that was anywhere close to the real Packers.
As we say goodbye on this Tuesday, Joe, anybody else that we didn't highlight that maybe should be getting some love on the waiver wire? Again, not big fab buys by any means, but anybody that we missed that should be brought to attention here?
Yeah, so Sterling Shepard of the New York Giants. I want you to go and look at his game log. And first and foremost, if you're not interested in the New York Giants after that crap fest, I don't blame you. I really don't. But go back and look at Sterling Shepard's game logs. He had 7 catches for 113 yards and a touchdown in week 1 against Denver. He was the only guy who did anything in that game. The last 2 games of 2020, 9 catches for 77 yards and a touchdown. 8 catches for 112 yards and a touchdown. And in that game, he had 2 carries for 24 yards and a touchdown. So Sterling Shepard has put up 3 massive games in a row. He's seen at least 5 targets in 11 straight games. Dating back to when he came off of IR last year, Sterling Shepard is Daniel Jones' favorite receiver. I don't care that they signed Kenny Golladay. Sterling Shepard's his favorite receiver.
And do you like Aguilar?
Another tease.
I was going to say, kind of like Christian Kirk, who we talked about.
Yeah. I can endorse Aguilar. I would rather have Aguilar than Kirk. Let's put it that way.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Joe, good stuff, man. As always, you can follow Joe on Twitter at @FG_Dolan for all your fantasy needs. He's the man over at Fantasy Points. He's our guest every single Tuesday. Good luck in week 2, Joe. We'll talk to you next week, pal. Thank you.
All right, take it easy. Well, it was awesome.
Yeah, you bet.
Sportsnet 960's NFL Fantasy Insider Joe Dolan is brought to you by Gateway Mechanical. Switch and save 10% or more on your commercial HVAC or refrigeration maintenance. Learn more today at gatewaymechanical.ca/switch.
Great.